From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy announced his retirement. President Trump moved quickly to appoint Brett Garland as Kennedy's replacement. Garland is viewed as an originalist judge, and assuming his confirmation, he's one who could join a bloc on the Supreme Court in overturning Roe v. Wade. This appointment has almost immediately changed the landscape, and now what might have been just sort of a fantasy of overturning Roe v. Wade is very much in reach. It's been a long struggle for many activists who have spent years opposing abortion. John Moore is a Southern Baptist minister who was co-chairman of the Trump campaign's Evangelical Advisory Board. He told PBS, quote, "There is a high level of confidence within the community that overturning Roe is actually finally possible. Evangelicals have never been more confident in the future of America than they are now. It's just a fact," end quote. But Jerry Falwell cautions that overturning Roe v. Wade would not be enough to declare victory. He told the Associated Press, quote, "What people don't understand is that if you overturn Roe v. Wade, all that does is give the states the right to decide whether abortion is legal or illegal. My guess is that there'd probably be less than 20 states that would make abortion illegal if given that right," end quote. So this hour, we wanted to have a discussion of what a post-Roe America might look like from the perspective of those who proudly call themselves pro-life. Should the states decide? Should there be a federal ban on abortion? What supports do they envision for the tens of thousands of women who would otherwise end their pregnancies? My guests this hour include Chris Holdridge. He is pastor of New City Fellowship and founder of 441 Ministries. Chris, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Carol Crossett is president of the board of Feminists Choosing Life of New York. Carol, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
And with us is Talana Nieves, a life advocate here in Rochester. Talana, welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me.
Carol, this has been a long bit of your life's work, I think it's fair to say. And here we are in a situation where this country, we really are looking at a possible post-Roe reality. And I want to start with you, also with a note to our listeners who, you know, emailed the program this morning saying, hey, aren't you going to have pro-choice panelists or panelists who identify as pro-choice, et cetera. This is a conversation not about whether abortion should or should not be legal or what we think about necessarily abortion per se. It's about functionally what we might be looking at, because the reality is very much in front of us now with the Supreme Court appointment, I think it's fair to say. And so functionally what your hopes are, because I think as Falwell mentions, it's not just one court ruling. It's not just one thing. There's a wide range of things that have to be addressed here. So let's start with, do you share the optimism that I read from various sources that this is a moment in America where if you've opposed abortion, this is as close as you've ever been, this could happen?
I'm personally optimistic. I'm a Democrat. I did not vote for Trump, but I was excited about the fact that the Senate brought in a number of pro-life senators at the election time. And I think that had to a large extent, had something to do with the Senate being a pro-life Senate. For me, I think, and for a number of people, and as it was voiced in a Washington Post article by a pro-choice columnist, you know, America has been held hostage by this issue for too long. She's pro-choice, but she said, you know what? If we feel confident that the American people do, in fact, oppose Roe versus Wade or support Roe versus Wade, why not bring it to the state and allow people to talk to each other about it? For too long, there's been a freeze on good discussion, good dialogue, and good argumentation face-to-face.
I think that notion of what the states would do, this is where I think it's hard to dispute what Falwell said just functionally. In other words, if Roe is overturned and the justices decide that it was just poorly written, that it was bad law, that it should go back to the states. If you look at the state houses, the composition of legislatures, and if you go on the working framework, which is probably an overgeneralization, but generally Republicans more in favor of anti-abortion law than Democrats, that, yeah, we could be looking at 20 states pretty quickly that do not make abortion an option anymore. Do you want it at the state level, or do you want a federal ban on abortion?
So you're talking about a human life amendment if there's a federal ban. So I think that's a good point. We really have two extreme positions, and we have one in the center. One extreme position would be a total human life amendment The other extreme position would be Roe versus Wade, which we have now. And the middle position would be let the states decide. And I'm for that moderate middle position.
Okay. And I'm sure we'll have a lot more to talk about as we go forward with that. Let's get our other panelists to describe what they'd like to see. Talana, what is your sense right now? Do you feel an optimism about this, and what would you like to see?
Well, I just want to clarify that I've only been active in the pro-life movement since October of last year, after I had the opportunity to hear Dr. Alveda King speak. And I believe every life is important. Every baby that we can save is important. My focus is on the black fighting, the black genocide that I feel that is going on in this country. I equate abortion with slavery. So I'm looking for, there are many, many parallels. And what I would like to see, ideally, is that abortion would become unthinkable as the American people realize that it's the taking of a human life. But I would like to see Roe v. Wade overturned, and that it's just as similar to slavery, where it is outlawed, but work with educating. What we try to do on the front lines, and I'm at Planned Parenthood at least once a week, we are trying to empower women at the point of decision, not making the decision for them, but giving them their options. And the women that I reach out to are the vulnerable women. And these are primarily young African-American women that, when given the opportunity to help them with their pregnancy and their resources and to find them a place to live or find them work to do, it's been remarkable where they have chosen not to have an abortion and to keep their baby. So I think that as the movement grows and science is on our side, that abortion is just unthinkable, the abortion clinics will go out of business.
But that's a cultural change, I think is what I'm hearing. When you say you want to make abortion unthinkable, that sounds like a cultural change.
It's a cultural change, but I think we need the law on our side, just like with slavery. Slavery was legal. And in the Dred Scott decision, slaves were not considered a person. And I'm from an African-American, and I had ancestors that were slaves and ancestors that were Native American Indians and English. And so this is like almost personal to me that there has really been, prior to Roe v. Wade, 1% of the African-American women that were childbearing age, 1% had abortions. It was mostly white women had 5 times. And it's reversed now. And in nationally, 15 childbearing women, 15% represent the black women that are childbearing age, but they're having 36% of the abortions. In Rochester, it's even worse. They represent 25% in the Monroe County area, 25% of the population, and they're having 65% of the abortions. Planned Parenthood is the number one provider of abortions, and I'm down there, and I have witnessed it over the last 9 months. Maybe 3 have been Asian, and they had out-of-state plates. I believe they were college students. A handful maybe were Caucasian, and the majority every day, these young women coming in are from the minority community.
So to be clear, cultural change with the law on your side means overturn Way, go back to the Roe to go back to the states as Carol wants, or do you want a federal ban?
Well, I would like to see a federal ban, just like with slavery. Okay. I mean, I would like to see a federal grant.
Chris Holdridge, when you were on this program before, we joked that you referred to yourself as, I said we joked, I mean, I know you're serious about it, but you kind of lightly referred to yourself as, quote, pro-life as heck. So tell me how you see this conversation and where we're going next now.
Yeah, so I'm a pastor and was talking with the ladies earlier. I'm a generalist, so I'm not an expert in the law or the statistics. Everything I say is anecdotal. Primarily. My thinking on this issue is what I'm after from a church perspective is a consistent, overall consistent life ethic across the board. I don't see that at our highest levels of government on either side of the aisle or people standing around outside the aisles. I see inconsistency, and I don't see how legislation is going to help us right now. I'd rather see a holistic effort, a full-scale holistic effort on behalf of the church to really address the issues that Talana just outlined really well. And I agree with everything she said about the tragedy, and I affirm her view of what human life is. But, and I can speak on behalf of a segment, a large segment of the church, when I say we've lost the heart of the nation, we've lost the ears of the nation. We no longer have the right to speak into the trials and challenges of the life, the lives of young African American women. That ship has left the port, and for us to come in now and say, "Hey, we're going to turn this thing upside down, get on board, or figure something else out," I think is brutal, and shows that we don't understand the dialogue and how it's changed.
Okay, but when you say not a legislative remedy to Roe, how about a Supreme Court decision? Do you want to see the next Supreme Court overturn Roe?
I'll say simply, I don't care. What I care about is seeing Christians really live lives that speak of a consistent life ethic and serve those who need the most love and compassion and support. When you abandon whole entire neighborhoods and never look back, and then are concerned about the violence and the problems of those neighborhoods from a position of safety and comfort, and then come in with legislation on top of that, it just adds insult to injury to the people who are living in those neighborhoods and suffering the consequences of that kind of poverty. So, you know, I don't think legislation is going to solve this. I think it's going to make it worse. I think we need to get ourselves to a point in the conversation where we can sit down, like Carol said, and have a real conversation about the issues and live lives that really show forth the gospel in meaningful ways, which our nation hasn't seen in generations.
Okay, so there's some opening statements from our guests there. Before I get to some of your phone calls and feedback, I want to listen to part of a conversation I had last week, because this is where I think some people who oppose abortion either grab onto this question on what we do in a post-Roe world, or certainly a post-abortion, legal abortion America. Some think this question's unfair, and some think it's perfectly fair. And it's a question on what do you do for the women who do then go to doctors or try to abort on their own? Do you create a structure where that becomes a criminal act, either before the provider or for the woman who is doing that? And do you define abortion as an act of homicide or murder? And so on the program last week was Jim Maxwell, who's running for Congress. He's a Republican in the 25th District, and this subject came up. And we'll listen to this exchange, and then we'll have this conversation with our guests here.
I am pro-life, with exceptions. I've always been that way. Whoever they nominate for the Supreme Court, I hope they have a profound respect for the Constitution. I hope they have a big heart and understand both sides of this issue. But I am pro-life.
So you want to see Roe v. Wade overturned?
I'm going to leave that to the courts to decide.
Well, the reason I ask, you're certainly right to say that would be in the Supreme Court's hand.
Right.
But there could be legislative either remedies or reactions if Roe is overturned, depending on the language of the justices. Now, the justices could say, turn it back to the states, in which case, pretty quickly, you could see 20 states overturn it. Or the justices could say, it is akin to murder, and we would have no option at the state level. Do you think abortion is murder?
I have to say, I think it is.
So should there be criminal penalties for abortion?
Absolutely not.
That's what I sort of don't understand, I admit. If you think something is murder, how could there not be any criminal penalties for committing that murder?
I think women get into pregnancy situations and they should not ever be punished for having gotten there. And for whatever they see as the right way out of that. I think it's wrong to punish these women, no matter which way they decide.
Okay, so his sentiment there is, I think, pretty consistent with what I often hear, but not entirely. I mean, we've seen, for example, Kevin Williamson, who is a columnist for National Review, briefly wrote for The Atlantic, and he was dismissed from The Atlantic after it came out that he had said, I would totally go with treating abortion like any other crime and with the penalty up to and including a hanging. He says that the law should treat abortion like any other homicide, and he thought, again, hanging is an appropriate penalty in a separate conversation. A bill introduced in Ohio in March would ban all abortions and allow criminal charges against doctors as well as patients who get the procedure, according to NPR. And a state senator from Idaho, Bob Nannini, leading a movement there during a candidate forum, he said he wants to lead a movement to allow for no abortion, and anyone who has an abortion should pay. When asked if he supported the death penalty for abortion, he nodded, and he confirmed his position in a later interview with the Associated Press. He later reversed his position and said prosecution should only focus on, quote, the abortionist. So I think this is going to be part of the discussion, because you're going to see at least some states, if not a federal ban on abortion going forward. Functionally, Carol, are these fair questions? I mean, is this part of what we have to grapple with? And what do you want to see, you know, sort of defined as the response? Because there will be abortions in some way. Even if you have a federal ban, some people will commit it. Some people will have abortion. Some people will go to doctors who do it, quote unquote, illegally. What's going to happen?
Yeah. First of all, abortion is not murder, because murder is a legal term and abortion is legal. It certainly is homicide. I am a women's historian, and there has never been a woman who has criminally been prosecuted for an abortion. There was one who was brought to the courts, and that was in the late 19th century. But there has never, and I repeat, never, a woman who has been prosecuted for having procured an abortion. Abortionists are different. I see women as victims to a large extent. Abortionists, on the other hand, are actually making money from doing abortions, and I don't see abortionists as victims.
Do you give women any agency in these decisions? I mean, certainly, I'm not saying the decision is easy, and as a man, far be it from me to try to wade in too deeply on this, but when you say there's no sort of agency on behalf of a woman who has an abortion, and the only penalty, if you consider it a homicide, and you say you do, should be against the doctor who performs it, why no agency for the woman at all?
Yeah, you know, there was a feminist activist who actually said that if indeed abortion is homicide, that it's belittling to women that we wouldn't treat that with equal severity as we would a man who committed homicide. That left me thinking. But on the other hand, I do believe there are women who have abortions for any reason at all. But I don't believe there are many of them. I think there are very few. And I think in order to protect the vulnerability of women who are needing an abortion or feeling like they're caught, either through economic reasons or psychological reasons, I don't believe they should be punished.
Okay. Talana, how do you feel about possible punishment? Before I move to Talana and Chris on this, doctors, providers, you do think there should be criminal penalties?
Absolutely, I do.
So that's the future.
Absolutely.
You can envision. Okay,
yes.
Talana.
I believe that abortion is murder. It's homicide. It's the killing of a child, of a human being. And I believe that if a woman is pregnant and she is attacked, it's double homicide if the baby dies also. And so I definitely agree with Carol from the point of view that the abortion providers should be, it should be criminal. And with the women, this is the first time I've been asked this. I have to kind of think about it. There's three types of women that are getting abortions. There's the abortion vulnerable. These are young girls who are being pressured by their mother. They're not going to be able to live at home if they don't have it. And so I think they're in a different category than the abortion-minded woman. And the abortion-determined woman is, I don't care. I don't care if it's a human being. I'm going to kill it. So I would have to reflect more on that. I don't think that for sure the abortion-vulnerable woman should be criminal, because they are typically coerced. The women that we have met outside of Planned Parenthood, it's a financial reason. It's they're going to lose their job. They don't have a plate. They're going to be kicked out of home. I had a young woman that is a friend that goes to church with me. She was 20 when she got pregnant. Her father and mother weren't together, but the father wanted her to have the abortion. Her mother didn't want her to have the abortion.
But, Talana, people steal from stores or other houses or other people for financial reasons, too. People deal drugs for financial reasons. I mean, there's a lot of things people do when there's economic hardship. Abortion is just one possibility, right? I mean, are we going to eliminate penalties for other crimes when people are in economic hardship?
Well, I would have to I'm focusing on the abortion. I would have to on the other things with the drugs. I know that there's been a lot of penalties with the people that are taking drugs that are put away for life or dealing. You know, so that's a different issue. My focus, I can answer intelligently about abortion,
okay.
And that is that the vulnerable women, I have seen them go in there where they have been forced to have an abortion or not given a choice, and I think they should just be treated differently than the determined woman who doesn't care, you know, whatever it is.
Okay. And Carol, one more question for you, because again, the provider is who you're thinking of is really the person who's responsible, or at least criminally responsible, in a post-Roe world. What about a woman who carries out an abortion, ends a pregnancy on her own without a doctor?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And of course, I think that pharmaceuticals will do that, are doing that. And I think pharmaceutical companies should be boycotted. I think pharmacists should be allowed to have conscience protection if they want
to. But it's not just pharmaceuticals. I mean, there's some, I mean, I don't want to be graphic, but there's other ways women do this and could in that scenario.
Probably not, actually. I think nowadays there's not the, you know, the coat hanger is no longer, there are other options to have an abortion except other than a coat hanger. And also there's penicillin, there's, that's a stretch,
okay,
in my opinion.
Okay. Chris, so what about criminal penalties in a post-Roe world?
Well, I'll echo what Talana said, that there clearly is a dissonance in our culture between a wanted child and an unwanted child. If a child is wanted and it is killed in the womb purposefully, that, you know, there can be charges and people can be penalized for doing that. We call it murder, you know. And so there's a dissonance there between what our culture says life is and life isn't. And I think that's on our culture to defend, not for those of us who consider ourselves pro-life to defend. Relative to capital punishment, you know, I'll reiterate, I'm after a consistent life ethic, you know. We don't kill people for killing. That's foolishness. And so I would reject that definitely. And then I would just add that, you know, there are no easy answers here. I mean, the relationship between a young woman and her body and the child growing inside of her body is unique and dynamic and cannot be compared to other things. And before I see any legislation that comes down the pike that I'm being asked to support as a Christian minister, I want answers to that kind of thing. What is going to happen to these vulnerable young women who have been brought up in homes where maybe for generations the go-to decision is abortion if you get pregnant, or in multiple abortions by the time they're in their 20s? We need to help them before legislation is coming through.
Let me grab a phone call, but Chris's point we're going to elaborate on, because I think all of our guests will have thoughts on in a world where there's a lot less, or in America where there's a lot less or no legal abortion, the supports that will need to be there for the children, for young mothers, and for young families, which will build on what Chris just said there. What is that? Practically, what's this going to look like to provide that support and to provide that nurturing? Let me get Jane in Lima on the phone. Go ahead, Jane.
Hi, Ivan. Thanks.
Go ahead.
I'd like to start out by saying that, your guests should be aware that the unintended pregnancy rate in this country has plummeted in the last 8 years under the Affordable Care Act, since women were since insurance was made available for everybody and people could get contraception under their insurance. But what I wanted to say was, my mom trained as a nurse at Strong Memorial Hospital in 1949 and 50, and she told us, she was avidly pro-choice all her life, but she told us that when she was in training, there was a maternity ward on one side, and across the hall was the septic ward, where all the women who were trying to self-abort stayed. And she said it was usually about equal numbers of people giving birth and suffering and dying from illegal abortions. So I want to know how your guests plan to can call themselves pro-life when they know full well that women will die if abortion is illegal. Fortunately, not in New York State, because we'll never let that happen. But in other states, it will.
Jane, thanks for the phone call. I'll start with Carol Crossett again. Carol, Carol's title is, well, she's president of the board of Feminists Choosing Life of New York. Go ahead,
yeah,
Carol.
Yeah. Bernard Nathanson was an abortion provider, and he told it all after, when he became pro-life, and said that he ushered in Roe versus Wade in the state of New York and nationally. That those figures were made up. He has a book called Aborting America. He said there were probably 5,000 women who died from abortion, not the tens of thousands that he and Bill Baird claimed. So, I mean, 5,000 is a lot. That's not to be minimized. So I understand what you're saying, but I think the numbers are skewed.
Jane, you want to respond to that? Are you there, Jane? Yeah, we okay, so Talana, what do you think?
Since 1973, 60 million babies have been aborted. And there are 18 million of those are black babies. And I don't know the number of women that died. I'm going to refer to what Carol said, that the women... There are women that are dying today in what is called legal abortions. In fact, last Thursday, an ambulance was at Planned Parenthood at 114 University Avenue, and a woman, and Thursday is their surgical abortion day, up to 10 weeks. A woman, I don't know if she was there for an abortion. That is the surgical day. Sometimes they're there for contraception, but she was taken away in an ambulance. And so there is no such thing as a safe abortion. And what I believe will happen, at least in the minority community, just like what Pastor Chris said, is there are resources now. And what we're trying to do out there on the outside of Planned Parenthood is to share the resources so the women, we're not making the decision for them, they can make the decision. We can show them how we can help them after the pregnancy. We can help them find a job. We can help them with daycare. We can help them with clothing and food. We can help them if they decide, once they see the resources that are available, they can make that decision. And the key thing is showing them an ultrasound. It's a very high rate that when a young woman sees a vulnerable abortion-minded woman sees an ultrasound, that she will choose to have life. And so what I believe will happen is before it was legal, 1% of the African American community, women of childbearing age, were having abortions. And now in Rochester, they're getting 60% of the abortions. So I believe that when the women, it'll put the churches and the neighborhoods into a position where we can share the resources. And there are a lot of resources out there right now.
But do you think, to Jane's point, do you think women will die trying to accomplish abortion through their own means?
There may be, I don't know. But I do know this, right now there are 3,000 babies that are dying every day.
Okay, that's fair enough. I think that point is different than saying abortion can be dangerous too, because look, if I drive a car the speed limit with my seatbelt on when I'm well rested in the middle of the day, that's different than driving drunk at night with my eyes closed. And if I get into a crash even in the middle of the day when I'm driving responsibly, you could say, well, see, driving's dangerous at all times. Abortion legally is definitely safer than abortion when women try to do it on their own. We can at least talk about that, right?
Well, okay.
I mean, so the question becomes, though, what you're saying is every abortion is the ending of a life.
Yes,
every abortion, in your view, is a murder.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I take that point. I mean, Chris, you know, Jane's concerned about what happens to women who will History says inevitably attempt this, and, mm-hmm. and the hope that our guests are sharing is that it's less than what we are being told will happen. Mm-hmm. Are you worried about those women?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I want to just hop in and say, you know, Jane, I love the Affordable Care Act, too. I'm a beneficiary of it. There's no way, shape, or form that, you know, I'm advocating for some political platform here. I have no desire as a Christian minister to return to some version of the good old days where there were, you know, fewer abortions and women in the kind of situation that you describe. I'm very cynical about the present, and I'm very cynical about the future for the church and for those who advocate for this kind of legislation, because, as you point out, there has not been help for women, and there's no track record of the church helping women in that way. We may find some evidence somewhere, but, you know, broadly speaking, in our culture, there's no track record of that. And there's no reason for those women to trust us in the future. And the neighborhood churches that would be burdened with the work that we're talking about, they can't even pay their full-time staff. They're not going to be able to mobilize the forces that we're talking about.
To help take care of the
to
children.
To help take care of these children.
To take
children.
Care of the young mothers, yeah. especially people living in poverty.
Yeah. So, when
But why not? Why can't there be a cultural change?
That's what I'm after. I'm after that cultural change. I'm after the kind of... So let me just say this. Young African American women who are faced with these challenges, if this kind of legislation comes through, it's just more old white guys telling them what to do with their bodies. Well, and that is a legitimate problem that we have right now. Our government, I know we've made lots of strides. We've got feminists working and people, darker-complected people working to change the complexion and shape of our government. But listen, it's a bunch of old white guys sitting around telling people what to do with their bodies. And I can particularly speak to Protestant evangelicals, until Protestant evangelicals get that dissonance and understand that they're just every time they open their mouths about this in our communities, this is a dead issue. You can pass as much legislation as you want, but until the church takes its position rightfully with the poor, listening to them, serving them, ministering to them, nothing's going to happen, man.
Well, I just want to say that the Catholic Family Center and the Catholic Charities USA is the second largest provider of social services in this country, and that's a pro-life church. I think one thing that we have neglected to say here is that the extreme position that Roe versus Wade, the decision is extreme. Roe versus Wade was decided in conjunction with another decision called Doe versus Bolton. And Doe versus Bolton, we are told that Roe and Doe are to be read together. In Doe, the decision, the health exception is extremely broad, and it's very broad in Roe. I don't think that we realize that according to the decision, and this is what it says, quote, health is to include not just physical health, but also psychological, mental, emotional health. The court cited age, familial circumstances, and anything relevant to a woman's general feeling of well-being. So basically, Roe versus Wade allows abortion at any time for any reason. And that's how extreme it is. And oftentimes the polls that are cited, you know, when you ask a very simple up or down question, are you in favor of Roe or are you not in favor of Roe? I want to know, does the person understand what the decision reads and how broad the health exception is?
Okay. And Talana?
I respectfully disagree with Pastor Chris. I am very hopeful. And I have been on the front lines for 9 months. And it may not be the leadership of the church. It's actually not the leadership of the church. It's the people of the church that are doing something about it. I'm a former Catholic, and I can tell you this, that if it was not for the Catholic Church, the remnant of the church that is out on the street, there would be more babies and women destroyed. We are pro-life. We are reaching out to the women because they're going to make the choice to save their baby, and we look beyond that. There are churches, there's two organizations, there's Compass Care and there's Embracing Options that hook up these women with places to live. There's a case where a mother was, she had her child, her daughter at 15, she wanted her daughter to have an abortion so she didn't go through what she went through. The daughter went to live with another Christian home, and it took 6 months, and this mother was in the church. And then she said, no, come home. And now she has her granddaughter. There are churches, Embracing Options will match up the women with a Christian church to follow them. So I respectfully disagree.
To follow them all throughout.
Yes.
We're not talking about a care basket when they leave.
No. We hook them up with a place. There's a new place in East Rochester where they can live up to 2 years. There are pro-life advocates that we've held showers for them. There was a woman that decided not to have an abortion last Thursday, and the director of Sidewalk Advocates for Life is Jim Havens, who would be great on your show. His wife took the woman to Wegmans to get food, and there was another advocate, Janet. She met with a woman, and she's taken them. And so my experience has been different. It's the people. I will grant it. It's not the pastors. But it's not the bishop.
I'm hearing this, and I'm hearing wonderful anecdotal stories of people in a moment saying, I'm going to take you to the grocery room. But look at a lot of the studies. I mean, a child 0 to 18, forget if they go to college, is $200,000 to $300,000.
There are pro-life advocates there,
but see,
the media is not going to tell you these stories because it's against their narrative. There are advocates throughout this country that have actually adopted the children and have actually provided financial resources in Texas. There are some that actually provided resources for the mother and the child. So the media is not going to share that narrative, but there is evidence. All I'm saying
I promise
is that
you, I'll share it if it's out there.
But all I'm saying is that the church does need to do its part.
Okay.
And just one more thing.
Yeah.
The pro-abortion side, it's all about, they like to make it a race thing. They want to call you a Nazi or a KKK member. And I can assure you, first of all, for me, the baby, it's a life. It's inside of the mother, yes. Just no different than a toddler that lives inside of the mother's house. They cannot live without the mother. It is the white men, the older white men, that are out there praying for these babies at Planned Parenthood. And the majority of the women going in there, and I've witnessed it, are black women, young black women. And so you have these congresswomen like Maxine Childish Brown and Sheila Jackson and another woman. They want to call every white man a racist or a KKK or Nazi. But there has not been one black man out there on the street. I'm out there, and you don't have to be black to relate to these women. The vulnerable women do respond to anybody. They respond, and they're the ones that are making a decision for life. It's the abortion minded and abortion determined, which are, I'm going to make it race, are these white women who are the ones that are giving us the finger and swearing at us and are telling the white men, you have no reason to tell us what we can do with our body. But the women that I'm reaching out to, which is the majority of the women that are having the abortions in Rochester, 65%, they respond whether you're black, white, red, yellow, and whether you're a man or not.
All right. So Pastor Chris, we're I know you want to respond to some of that. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I want to affirm those anecdotes you shared about individuals taking women under their arm or their wing and helping them. I get that. I love that. But you cannot avoid the fact that the cities have been abandoned by the churches. Just walk through my neighborhood and see the empty church buildings that generations ago had hundreds and hundreds of people involved in them. The poorest people in our society have been abandoned by the Church of Christ. And then we see how they construct their own subcultures and ideas and ideals and ethic in the absence of the church, and learn to live their lives and deal with the struggles and issues of their life in the absence of the church. And then from the outside, and I will say, with strong, smaller churches still resident in those neighborhoods, but struggling the whole time. But then the church comes from the outside and says, hey, you guys can't do that. Let us show you how to do it. The the degree of nihilism that exists in American poverty right now is not going to be solved by legislation, and it's not going to be solved by a few folks of means taking young black women under their wing and helping them. It's going to be changed by a movement of people who love and care and walk alongside of daily the poor in a life-on-life, everybody-gets-dirty situation. And that's how I want to see America love and take care of unborn children. And I'm telling you what, it's generations away.
Carol, go ahead, and then we're going to get some listener feedback. Go ahead, Carol.
I used to be a lobbyist for Bread for the World, and I'm still an activist. I'm a Democrat. I do all of those things that Chris is talking about. They're critical to do. You know, the Supreme Court has overturned itself over 200, reversed itself over 200 times. And some of the biggest cases, of course, the case that Talana mentioned is the Dred Scott decision, and that was overturned, of course, by the 13th and 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. But basically, that was the dissent to the Dred Scott decision asserted that you have to look at what you're talking about when you say property. And Ben Curtis, who was a judge in his dissenting decision to Dred Scott, said it was necessary first to have a clear view of the nature of the property, which is now in question. Of course, the nature of the property is a human being. And so that turns everything on its face when we're talking about the Roe versus Wade decision.
All right, I'm looking at feedback here, and there's feedback on a lot of different sides. I'm going to grab Erica in Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, Erica. Keep it tight.
Hi. Just want to say thank you for having me. I really appreciate what the minister is saying. He wants to have a holistic cultural change. As an individual who is probably pro-choice, I have to agree with him, and I would probably change my view from pro-choice to pro-life specifically if there was this holistic change. My concern is when we talk about how much resources we have, why don't we see it? Why don't we see all of what these ladies are saying actually happen? If all of these resources were there pre- and postnatal care, then we wouldn't be having this conversation. Where is the church that they're talking about, and why isn't it more effective?
Erica, thank you for that. Talana, go ahead.
Well, that's a very good point, Erica. And I'm not going to speak from the church point of view because I'm not a pastor. I'm just a regular person. I think it's the people that have to implement what Pastor Chris is saying. I don't have the patience to wait around for the church to get its act together, so I'm just going to do what I can do. I can only control what my behavior is. The reason why the community doesn't know about it is because as often as we invite the media out to the different events and we let them know about, for example, Focus Pregnancy Center, which is right across the street from Planned Parenthood, and all that they do, the media is not covering it. The media, they didn't come out and cover Dr. Alveda King.
I don't think that's addressing Erica's question, to be fair. She's saying if all of these actions were already happening, why do people need abortion in the first place? Why are people struggling in poverty?
Nobody knows about it. She was saying, my understanding is that, why don't we know about this? Because if we knew about all the resources, then we would be having a different conversation.
There aren't like barns full of cash where people in poverty could just stroll into, but the media doesn't cover them, right? I mean, that's not what you're arguing.
What I'm saying is that when the women are given a choice and they find out that there are resources financially to help them find a job, for daycare, for a place to live, when those women have found out about, and I can only speak for Rochester, there are some that have made a decision to keep their baby because it was that decision. So there's a whole list of different organizations that I can give you, but it is a challenge to get it out there because the challenge is that Pastor Chris is right. The church the church, it's okay for the church to try to do something now.
But are you arguing, Talana, that there are already the resources in place that if, so in 2014, the latest year of full CDC data, 652,000 abortions in this country. Do we have the resources in place to care for those 652,000 children and many of the mothers who would be living in poverty, many single mothers? Do we have the resources now?
Based on the information that I have gotten from the national organizations, the pro-life pro-life organizations, yes.
We already do. Carol, do you believe we do?
Well, I'd like to kind of turn the whole conversation flip it. I wonder if we wouldn't be better at providing for women if abortion wasn't available as a Band-Aid. I think every abortion saves the government money for subsidized housing, for education, for daycare for these women. That's what I think.
Okay. I'm simply asking, because, and the reason we're having this conversation, because Teresa and a few others are upset with me that we only have a quote-unquote one-sided panel, and I don't think we have that. I think we've got three people with different views from the self-described pro-life position, and I think this has been very productive, because we're headed for this. I mean, with this Supreme Court, I think we're headed for a post-Roe America, but I think that question's important. 652,000 abortions, if we see zero, or at least zero legal, are the resources in place to take care of them? That's important. Talana says, you know, you think that we probably
I
do.
I believe right there now. Are.
Carol, do we have those resources in place now?
I don't think we do. I have to disagree with Talana. I don't think we do. But I think that maybe we don't because abortion is available as a Band-Aid.
So you think that will change with the elimination of it? So in other words, the resources will become available?
I think that they may become more available if we have more children that need to be taken care of. I believe that we will demand greater resources and subsidies for these women.
Okay. Pastor Chris, do we have resources available already?
Meaning our nation, or we meaning in the church, that's kind of hard. I would say I think we have the resources, greatest country in the world, rah, rah, rah. We have the resources.
Yeah, maybe the framing the question is
wrong. It's the will. We're not currently in position, but if we overhauled our prison system, if we overhauled the way we fund our military, if we looked differently at people living in poverty, I mean, there's a thousand things we could do to reallocate resources if we had the will to really serve the most needy in our nation.
Talana, got to keep it tight, go, because I want to try to get a few more
phone
calls.
First of all, the millions the federal government is spending right now to subsidize abortion could be used for these women. So, I mean, there's the government funding. I mean, Planned Parenthood alone is a $1 billion company. Well, the bulk of that money is our tax dollars, which I did not agree should be spent on abortion. So that's another resource. But I'll give you an example. We're trying to get a mobile unit. And already, an ultrasound mobile unit for Rochester, already we have a commitment of $50,000 from a group just by asking them. So I believe that, yes, and I'm going with that, and I'm sticking with it, that we have the resources.
Let me also add, if churches stop building arenas and outfitting their pastors with jets and cars and junk like that, there'd be a lot more money available from the church as well.
I think Joel Osteen is listening right now.
No, he's not.
let's try to move quickly through your phone calls. Michelle in Buffalo, 30 seconds. Go ahead.
I guess I had two quick questions, actually, or comments. One is that I think it's in terms of the available resources to address, the needs of women in a post-Roe nation. I think it's a sad commentary, really, on the feminist movement. So much of the focus has been, to support Roe, to push, for Roe. And again, like Carol Cossett had said, Roe versus Wade allows for abortion on demand throughout all 9 months of pregnancy. So I think the feminist movement and their almost singular focus on Roe versus Wade and abortion has just taken away so much time and energy from pulling together the resources necessary to address the root causes for abortion, is my first comment. My second comment is that, general polling, is quoted in the media as showing that, you know, most Americans support Roe versus Wade and do not want to see it overturned. But Gallup polling in both 2012 and 2018, when you dive deeper, shows that the vast majority of Americans oppose abortion in the second and third trimester, and that the majority of Americans also support abortion restrictions throughout all 9 months of pregnancy, including informed consent, wait periods, as well as parental involvement.
That's true. That's a good description of it. Most Americans don't want Roe overturned, if you ask them. Most Americans will support abortion in the first trimester, but it is nuanced. It's not like, do you support abortion, yes or no? It changes as you go throughout the pregnancy, and it is pretty strongly opposed in late states. That's true. I mean, I take that point. But that's also not necessarily representative of where the Supreme Court is. Supreme Court's going to have a say here, and we've got to be tight here in our last minute here. Carol, some final thoughts as we look ahead here, as you get ready for a post-Roe America, which seems to be coming in the next few years. What are your final thoughts for the audience here?
Yeah, I feel like pro-life people have been like tigers in cages because we haven't had an opportunity to have dialogue. You know, if you do work at a state level and pass legislation, it doesn't pass the Supreme Court. Even state courts won't pass it based on what they anticipate the federal court will do. So our hands are tied. It's time to have face-to-face conversations, argue these issues. And if it's not about legislation, we're not going to sit around and talk about the morality of abortion. Legislation forces us to talk to each other.
20 seconds. Delana, go ahead.
I'd just like to quote a little boy. He's 5 years old. He's a rescue baby. His name is Adrian. He was out at Planned Parenthood with me and his mother. And when his mother explained to him what was going on, he said to us, "That is wrong that the doctors are killing the babies. The doctors are supposed to help the babies."
20 seconds. Pastor Chris.
Anyone who would support this kind of legislation right now better have a robust billion-dollar plan and movement ready to care for these young women and to address the core problems of these neighborhoods.
You really think we're generations away from realistically doing it?
Yes.
That's a tough view, but that's what consistent...
Took 100 years to get here.
That's a consistent life ethic from the pastor and Carol Crossed, from Feminist Choosing Life New York, to Lana Nieves, a life advocate. Come back. You'll all be welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Thanks to Rob and Megan behind the glass. I'm Evan. Have a nice afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.